As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
This is the Civilized Barking Podcast with Zach Jackson.
Hey everybody, it's a Civilized Barking Post-Draft Podcast. Zach Jackson and Jason Lloyd, probably 48, I don't know, 67, I don't know. Even in a shortened draft, my brain turns to mush. Anyway, we're going to talk draft, we're going to talk Browns. The schedule release is next week. You know, Jason, frankly, the Browns were never going to hit home runs in this draft, and they knew that. They gave away this first-round pick more. To me, it was they were never going to draft a player that was going to trump the storyline of Clowney or no Clowney, right? I trust that the Browns know what they're doing. Their third-round track record has not been good, but, I think they got good players. I think they did what they did for a reason. So it's not any hot take express that we're jumping on here, right? The patience is required. You're looking at a team that I think is good, that it thinks it's really good, right? And there's just some things out there hanging out, like the suspension of the quarterback, like the Clowney thing. And I understand the excitement, but, you know, everybody's got to take a deep breath because we're still months away from finding out how any of this really comes together.
Yeah, I think if we would have said before the draft started the Browns are going to take a cornerback with their first pick, probably would have surprised a lot of people. I don't know necessarily that if you would have said the Browns are going to trade down, a lot of people probably would have said, yeah, okay, that sounds about right. But for a cornerback, I think that caught some people by surprise. I do agree with you. I think this regime has earned the benefit of the doubt more so than probably some of the others that you have to trust they know what they're doing. Obviously, they like Martin Emerson quite a bit to turn around and trade Troy Hill with a year left on his deal that just more or less cleared a spot for him as far as I'm concerned. And we'll see. You know, I mean, to me, the most important pick was the kicker. And I know that's sort of a what's the word? It's a divided idea to draft a kicker, particularly in the fourth round. I think he's going to make the most immediate impact, though, of anyone really in that draft class. Perrion Winfrey really fascinates me, not only because he likes to bark to the local media and he's an absolute lunatic, but he actually can play a little bit. And I was watching some of his highlight tapes after the draft, and boy, can he move. For a guy his size, he's quick and agile, and I, to me, he's a day one starter, and you got him in the fourth round. There's so much to talk about. There's so many ways to look at this. I thought you asked Andrew a terrific question after the draft that I hadn't really thought of. He didn't really give a great answer. He said he didn't really have a great response to it. But the idea of this being the COVID draft, and it was so deep, and there were so many sort of six-year seniors available that it really pushed down the talent to where, you know, I was on yesterday, I was on Afternoon Drive with Dustin Fox. We had Ian Fitzsimmons on from ESPN Radio. And Ian had done the draft from Vegas and was talking to a lot of the NFL folks out there. And they just thought there was just incredible value in the later rounds of this draft. And Perrion Winfrey is a guy who probably should have gone earlier. Jerome Ford is a guy who probably could have gone two rounds earlier in a different draft. And you heard Andrew say after the draft that they felt like the middle rounds were sort of the sweet spot. The Colts GM, Chris Ballard, said told their media the same thing. He felt like the middle rounds is really where the value was at. And I think it's all of these factors coming together the last couple of years to make guys, push guys into positions that they normally wouldn't be at. And so that would make you even say even more, boy, that Martin Emerson pick was a little bit of a head scratcher. If you go off our Dane Brugler, it was a bit of a head scratcher for where he had him ranked.
Yeah, 100 spots.
Yeah.
Right.
But yeah. It's a corner with size, with length, with long arms. And I'm just going to defer to the Browns who studied this for a year and know a hell of a lot more about Martin Emerson than I do, that there's a reason that they went and got him.
So you won't get any argument from me on the thought that Cade York could be the most important pick, right? I think it's a little hot take-ish to say it is. But when you look at where the Browns are and where they think they can be as early as 8 months from now, Jason, right? Then, like, I think it's easy to say that. And, yes, it's early for a kicker. I mean, it's 25 spots ahead of where McPherson went last year. And, you know, it's hard to expect anybody to be that good, right? But, like, you know, if you think you're good, you get the guy. If you think that he's taking him, it doesn't matter if it's 124 or 108 or 88, right? You go get him. And this team has needed a kicker. It has been a revolving door of mediocrity since Phil Dawson left, and that was a damn decade ago. And, you know, this was not new. This was not something that they waded into lightly. So you judge the guy's leg strength. You judge the guy's makeup. You know, however else you evaluate kickers, I don't know. I've watched the same shitty ones you guys all have for 10 years, right? And you think he can do this because Evan McPherson changed the Bengals. The other three teams in the division, and Andrew Berry will never say that he's building a team based on what they have, but if he's not, he's not doing his team a service. I mean, three of the best six kickers in the league are in the AFC North. And it's why is it valued? Because of the weather. Because you know you're going to be in close competitive games. You know, the Ravens ran out of dudes last year. But had they snuck in the playoffs, it would have been because Justin Tucker made some bombs early in the year. I mean, over the course of his career. Now, Justin Tucker is the greatest to ever do it and probably the only kicker in our time that we're going to see go in Canton, right? But, like, 75% of Justin Tucker is really good. And, like, you don't need to be Evan McPherson if you're Cade York, but the Browns need that weapon. And was it you or someone else that asked Stefanski about you know, his strategy changing based on trusting his kicker?
No, I mean, I was talking about that yesterday on the radio, but I did not ask Kevin about that.
You waded into it in your article a little bit and, you know, someone asked him something along those lines. And I think that answer, I guess, is my way of transitioning this back to you. That sums it up. We're way early with all this talk. But it's a fair question. I mean, when you know your guy can't make, it does change a strategy. Last year, I mean, when the Browns were shitty, but still in playoff contention, when McLaughlin was missing extra points, that was changing shapes of games, right? When it was hard for them to score. So when you have that luxury and it can change the way you think, it's a game-to-game basis. It's way down the road. But, like, when you trust your guy, everything changes, and the Bengals are a great example of that.
So the Browns missed the playoffs last year because of two primary reasons. They needed better quarterback play and they needed a better kicker. And they've now gone and upgraded both of those spots. And if you look at, I mean, I ran the numbers, 23% of games last year were decided by, actually you ran the numbers for me, 23% of games last year were decided by 3 points or less. And this is the trend that keeps ticking up. So on average, every team will have about four games decided by their kicker. And the Browns last year had five. And it was the last three games that mattered. The second Ravens game, the Raiders and the Packers, and they lost two of those. And if they win one of those, two of those, you know, they were all right there. And this team, for as much as went wrong and for as much as we bombed the quarterback play and everything else, they still weren't very far off from the playoffs. And they have a better kicker. They probably make the playoffs. And I absolutely agree with you. If you have a kicker you trust, it changes your play calling. 1 million. I mean, go back to the Green Bay game last year on Christmas Day when that was the game, I believe, that McLaughlin missed, right? And they had Chris Blewett in there. You really think Kevin at any point was going to trust this dude who just walked in off the street to make an important kick? There's no way. Like, I promise you that they went into the drive. It's fogging out of me, but the drive toward the end of the game, they needed six. There's no way they were going to kick a three. And you know, I would even take it a step further. If you have confidence in your kicker, doesn't that change your play call on third and eight from the 34, 35?
It sure can.
Yeah, if you have confidence that you've got a guy who can bang it through from 51, 52 yards, and Cade York's leg is, he's got a massive leg. He's got a ton of confidence. Everybody wants to talk about the fog kick, and I think it's great. I love the fact that he ran down the field doing the chomp after as a sophomore. And, you know, he said, I was reading where he said, like, yeah, my whole thought process going into that was I really want to do the chomp. So I'm going to make this kick so I can run down the field doing the chomp in the swamp. And there was something else I read where he was at one of those kicking academies, and they had that track man there. And it's those things that can track your golf swing, which God forbid anyone ever tracks mine with the track man. And baseball distances, it measures distances. And he was banging kicks that would have been good from 71. Now, obviously, it's prime conditions. There's no rush coming. You know, it's off a tee. Or I don't know if it was off a hold or off a tee. But
right.
You're not expecting him to make 71-yard kicks in a game. But the point is, leg strength is not a problem with this guy. And if you don't, you know, Dustin and I were going back and forth yesterday, and Dustin hated it and said kickers are 50-50 if they work out or not. Well, that's any draft pick.
Sure.
You don't have a kicker, you go get a kicker. And this was the one spot in the draft where they were able to get the number one guy on their board at that position. They felt like Cade York was the best kicker in this draft, so you go get him. Until you find a kicker, if this doesn't work in 2 years, you cut him and you go draft another one. You just keep drafting him. You keep shooting. To me, it's no different than quarterback. You keep shooting until you get one.
No, I agree. And neither of us being technical kicking experts, I can say the best way to eventually navigate these wins is to just have enough leg to figure it out, right? Like to put it up there.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
You know, Phil Dawson, as he got older, his leg did get stronger, but he just was a master of the chip shots, the bunker shots, the trick shots, right? But the first thing is, you know, just being able to do it and having that swag. And I trust that the Browns, you know, did their research on his makeup and everything. Winfrey, you know, he's another guy that's 50 spots past his value. And that usually means that he's either completely overrated or there was some issue there. You know, I've asked some people about him. He is very explosive. He's just very raw. So we'll see. I mean, the Browns trust Chris Kiffin, their defensive line coach. They were afraid they were going to lose him actually early in the year. He went and joined his brother's staff and then changed his mind. But, you know, Winfrey is just – some will tell you he's just not very good. He's just an athlete, and some will tell you he's just raw and can get in there. And, you know, the Browns value pass rush. I'm not sure – it's just not refined in his pass rush. He did get there. So – you know, certainly anytime you see a guy that had a second round grade, and Dane wasn't the only one, Daniel Jeremiah also, one of the other draft Knicks had Winfrey in the high 40s or low 50s. So to get him early on Saturday made sense. And it always felt like the Browns weren't, you know, if you just look at what they've done at D tackle, A, it's not much. And B, they waited. So it always made sense that they'd go to the other positions first. So yeah. My thing with Martin Emerson and Troy Hill here, before I give one general draft thought, you know, I don't know what's – there had to be a reason that they got rid of Troy. And I know that he was going into his last year here, and I know that it actually marks progress, because this is what good teams do. They get rid of a player a year too early instead of a year too late. But getting rid of him now does not make you better, Jason, because they don't have a true slot corner on this team. And I know Greg Newsom can do it, and they think Greg Newsom can do anything. I don't think you drafted Greg Newsom to be your slot corner. And Emerson at 6'2", there just aren't 6'2" slot corners. So he can do it in a pinch, right? Just seems like, I mean, he's 21. He had one interception. I know he fits all their physical trademarks, athletic testing and length and all of that. I'm not sure what you can count on there. So the thinking is that, you know, Greedy won't be here anymore past this year, that Emerson will learn, and that eventually, you know, he will catch up to his traits and he will be a good player. And that might be right. But the thought that you can never have too many corners rings a little hollow when the first thing you do is trade Troy Hill for a fifth round pick. I mean, how many fifth round picks do we need?
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, just to that point, I mean, they drafted 9 guys. You really think all 9 of these guys are going to make the team? I don't.
No. At least 3 of them aren't making the team, barring something crazy.
So while you mentioned the fifth round, let's jump to Jerome Ford. Because that was a curious pick to me. I wasn't expecting them to take a running back. I had said early in the offseason, you know, I just kind of floated the idea, maybe do you look at trading Kareem Hunt this offseason? He had the injury problems last year. He doesn't have a lot of mileage on him because of the time he missed in Kansas City. He's only, I think, 27, 28, maybe somewhere in there. And so you don't think he would be breaking down yet, but he is going into the last year of his deal. And I just kind of floated the idea, maybe trade Kareem Hunt. And people went crazy and told me I was an idiot. And I said, okay, fine.
Hey, you're but go ahead.
Two things can be true. I can be an idiot. The Browns might still be considering.
This is right. This is right. Two things can be true.
So are these at all related? Were you surprised by the Ford pick? And is that at all tied to Kareem's future? We just got them talking about Troy Hill and the fact they moved off him a year too early and a year too late. I look at it as, it's funny because you said at the draft, Browns are trying to win a Super Bowl. And I 1,000,000% agree with you. That's true. And Troy Hill probably brings better value than a fifth round pick, just like Kareem himself would bring better value than anything they would get for him. But I think an analytic way to look at this is we only have a year left on this guy's contract. He's not going to be here past this time. Move him now and get something for him rather than losing him for nothing.
Yeah. So this is a hard one to read, and I'm not going to claim that I can, but Kareem is entering the last year of his contract, and Kareem makes money. You know, not a ton, but and the Browns have it, but he makes money. D'Ernest Johnson does not have a contract. D'Ernest Johnson thinks he should have a contract. He hired Drew Rosenhaus. And D'Ernest Johnson has shown that he is an NFL running back, right? And in this system, maybe a good one. You know, there was no restricted offer for him because teams don't value running backs. And here's what makes this extra curious, Jason, right? As we go here, we now have three off seasons of Barry. And there are things you can trust with the age and the draft, right? And in the putting the premium on certain positions. But like if you're running a straight analytics premium positions, you know, running backs doesn't come up in that, right? Those are supposed to be the most expendable guys in modern football. The Browns pay guards. Like that's out of the box too. So yes, I was surprised on the Ford pick. Clearly they like the player, but it doesn't create a logjam. It adds to a logjam. So, you know, it feels like the shift is away from multiple tight ends and having to run it first. But when you have this logjam at running back, I don't know. So, yeah, I think although it's hard to imagine any running back, Kareem or D'Ernest is who I'm mentioning here, having trade value that really impacts the Browns, it does everything does point to one of those guys being moved. So I can take a wild guess and think that maybe there's a player for player trade out there somewhere. I can take a less wild guess and think the strategy is just like it is with Baker. Some team is going to lose its running back or number two running back in the preseason and panic, and then the Browns will move one of those guys. But yeah, the when you take Ford there and you say he has a skill set that would say he can come out of the bullpen for this offense and that he can be a guy who can stick around for a couple of years, then yes, it's looking like they're not all going to be here. So the thing with trading Kareem Hunt, and this was a little bit of the case with Odell last year, although the injury made it more complicated. There is no way that you're getting value back that even comes close to matching the value that Kareem Hunt gives you for this team, right? So Kareem wasn't healthy last year and a lot went wrong and whatever. But Jason, name the five guys that are most fun to watch play. Name the five guys that absolutely lay it on the line every single play. The third quarter in week one, the fourth quarter in week seven, right? He blocks, he catches passes. His skill set with Deshaun Watson, you would think would be a perfect match, right? The Browns don't get better if they move Kareem Hunt. And for a running back that makes $6 million and is only under contract for 1 year, I don't see a team giving up a second-day draft pick for him outside. So I just can sum that up by saying it feels like a move is coming, but it's a head-scratcher either way.
See, I thought maybe they could get a third for him. You're saying no because he's got a year left on his deal and running backs aren't valued. But I do believe between Hunt and D'Ernest Johnson, Kareem's going to bring you more value probably just on name and production. And D'Ernest, to me, fits the better role of the backup than Kareem does. Because, I mean, let's be honest, for a variety of reasons, the Kareem-Nick Chubb pairing hasn't worked the way that we thought it would. I mean, they've been on the field together, I think it's less than 30 games, and the whole time Kareem has been here, and injuries have a lot to do with that. And Freddie, for all of his faults, he did figure out a way to get them both on the field at the same time. But it just hasn't looked like what we thought it that it would. And when you have Deshaun in here now, when you have an electrifying quarterback who can make plays down the field, you think it feels like more than what you need in that backfield. And that's just why if the best you can get is for Kareem is a fifth, then I'm keeping Kareem Hunt. I'm not trading him for a fifth round pick because, like you said,
these guys love fifth round picks. These guys love fifth round picks.
But it's got to be. I mean, if I could get a third for Kareem Hunt, I'm having that conversation and I'm listening. I think just because, and also I do think we're getting ahead of ourselves a little bit. We got to get Jerome Ford into camp and see what he can do, and see what he looks like in the preseason. And you know,
but you know what they're saying on that, Jason, is, I mean, this is a guy that played at Alabama, that was a feature back at 2 years for Cincinnati team that played in huge games.
So you don't think there's any question about what he can do?
No, it's cut and dry. This is a yes. They drafted him because they love what he can do. Yes. So.
And just cutting Dimitri Felton doesn't solve this, right? Or does it? Can you carry four if you just cut Felton?
No. Well, Felton's the fifth right now if you count De'Ernest. So some move is coming. Like I said, and I didn't, before I started into that diatribe, I didn't think of the player for player trade that they might have lined up somewhere, but it could be. It could be that. So. You know, I'll just say this here, I write this all the time, and I say this all the time. The Browns are not going to nail every pick. They're not going to nail every player value. And, you know, they're going to do head-scratching things, right? But there's always going to be a plan behind it. There never is Andrew Berry going to get a call at 3:59 and make a trade at 4:03. No, he's going to get a call at 3:59, and he's going to make the trade three Tuesdays from now. Right? They're going to go over everything. Quasi, who's hilarious, was making that 2026 comment in a comfortable environment on the Browns radio show as he was going out the door, but it was rooted in truth.
Right? Say that again, because you mentioned that at the combine too, and I don't remember this whole story now.
Yeah, he basically said, you know, it was just a conversation about thankful to Andrew for giving him a chance and bringing him here and whatever. And he's like, yeah, you know, I love that dude. I'm mostly going to miss the midnight text about a 2026 seventh round pick scenario. So,
and then they got together, you know, and made a trade on draft night. The two of them.
Yes. Yeah. And the first thing Kwesi did was trade, you know, so
you made a ton of trades.
That's how it goes. All right. So I want to make two draft points here. And then we can talk schedule or something else, because like I said, until we see these guys, you know, there's not a whole lot we can say. Sheil, our colleague, is big on this, and a lot of people are big on this. And to a larger point, I agree. Good teams don't draft for need, right? Barry said it, competition drives everything. What you need today isn't what you need tomorrow. And that can be true 12 months of the year, and it certainly can be true in the season as guys get hurt and guys underperform and circumstances for your team change, right? So that being said, of course you draft for need, right? Because like, you have needs and you have a roster that you're trying to win now. So marrying that balance is hard. And the Browns, you know, at this point before the draft and before Clowney, could run out 22 starters and be a good team. Could it be a great team without some of those things resolved? You know, I don't know. I do think part of their thinking and trading down this year, and part of what comes off as arrogance to me, quite frankly, is that they believe they hit two home runs last year with Greg Newsom, who's 22 years old, and Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah, who's 22 years old. And they're like, we can draft for depth. We can draft away from our needs and just get good players and keep them in the bullpen. And that might totally pay off down the road. So we'll see. That's the marriage there. And then the other thing that you're marrying here is value matters in the draft. Right. And Andrew Berry, one of his mentors is Howie Roseman, who's now made over 40 trades during the draft in 10 years running the Eagles. Just that's what he does. And Andrew Berry every year has traded down in the middle rounds for a mid round pick for the next year. That's not coincidence. That strategy, you know, this year he flipped 44 into 68 and 2 4th rounders. He flipped another 4th rounder into a 5th for next year. He took a guy in Troy Hill who had a starting position on this team, because slot corner is a starting position in today's NFL, and turn it into a 5th-round pick. So that's how they're going to run drafts, and there is that. But then the question of value is also, when you're trying to win the Super Bowl, how many fucking 5th-round picks do you need? Right? And I'm not being a curmudgeon with that. I'm not being anti-analytics at all. I'm just asking a valid question, right? Like, okay, you know, the, you're drafting depth and good players here, but like, how many of those do you really need? And how many times, you know, passing on guys that we know? And so it was names that we knew, you know, David Ojabo and George Pickens are brand names for, if you follow the draft, they're huge names if you follow college football, and they played positions that have the Browns were the top needs, right? Ojabo obviously has the injury. The Ravens have a connection to him, having hired the new defensive coordinator from Michigan. The Ravens head coach's brother is the head coach at Michigan. You let the Ravens have David Ojabo. No, a lot of teams were down on George Pickens. He had a lot of shithead incidents, including just a week before the draft where he was a passenger in a car accident and walked away from it at 4 a.m, which is a no-no. It was, you know, nothing criminal from what I understand on his record, but a long line of incidents on and off the field where teams kind of questioned his decision-making. He came off as, you know, a little entitled, and that's fine. The Browns didn't want that. The Browns got a good player in David Bell, right? But nobody drafts receivers like the Pittsburgh Steelers, and they got George Pickens because they said he's big and fast and probably the next in line of their big and fast receivers. So, again, these are questions that are going to be, you know, not answered for years down the road. And we will see, you know, how that all turns out. But as much as I say how many fifth rounders do you need, I will present the flip side like this, Jason. Everybody's lauding the Jets, and Joe Douglas comes from the Ravens tree. And, you know, I think we'll do a good job there given time. And everybody's like, wow, they knocked it out. And it sure looks like they did. But when you have picks 4 and 10 and you trade back for 23, aren't you supposed to knock it out? Right? Yeah. With players that everybody knows? Like, so it's totally cliche to say at least 2 and 3 years down the road to grade a draft class. And it's totally cliche to say inside 32 draft rooms, everybody gives themselves an A, right? We just don't know. And that doesn't move needles in our hot take society. And it doesn't make this podcast any more interesting, frankly, right? So I just say, I don't know how many fifth-round picks the Browns need or why they insist on doing it, but I do think they're still in good hands, and we'll see how this draft class turns out. I mean, as much as they hit those home runs last year with those guys, there is a chance that Andrew Berry's first offseason was shitty, and that could show itself here this year. So none of these guys, except David Bell, to me, are going to be day one players. I guess, well, York is, right? But of the 22, I won't be surprised if Bell's the only one, but that doesn't mean that by October, November, certainly December, that these guys won't be playing. And if Winfrey and Emerson are big time contributors by the end of the season, I won't be stunned.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Okay, so now that we're through the draft, Judavian and Jarvis. Both back, both gone. One back, one gone.
I mean, if they really wanted Jarvis, guys, they'd have done it long ago. That's just what I think. He's taken other visits. The Browns put out that huge statement and everything thanking him. They've been in contact with the agent. Like, I think the Browns are interested in Jarvis at, like, a minimum contract, and Jarvis wants more than that. And I just don't think it's going to happen, and I think David Bell made that less likely. I think Judavian has always been likely. I think it's necessary, quite frankly. I understand the trepidation in paying a 29-year-old Judavian Clowney $12 million a year. But, I mean, look at what you did for Deshaun Watson, and look where you think your team is. Aren't they so much scarier with Judavian Clowney than without?
Yeah, and I've been down on the Clowney signing all along, and even I have to concede that one.
Yeah, so
at this point, you got to go get him, I think. Because you didn't take an edge rusher in the second round. Who's your starter? If it's not Clowney, sure. Who's your starter at that spot?
Sure. Like, Alex Wright is a traits guy. He's a 21-year-old from UAB, right? Like, the Browns don't play Jacksonville State and Rice in September. They play the Bills and the Ravens, okay? Like, you need Jadeveon Clowney. I mean, last year we didn't have full camp restrictions like the year before, Jason, but we had a little bit. And remember when we'd stand outside the gate and the defensive line would be way on the opposite corner? Who did you see over there? Clowney and Garrett? Were they the two fastest dudes in the line too?
Yes. Yep.
Like, you know, how do you keep Lamar Jackson from lighting you up? because obviously you can't guard Mark Andrews. That's been proven. Right? How do you keep that from happening? Well, Owusu-Koromo hits him in the ankle. That helps. But like those two guys, right? Like you play Josh Allen next year. You're thinking you're going to play Josh Allen twice. Like you need those guys. Clowney is not a perfect player, and I understand there's risk with given his injury history. But he's so good against the run. He is the perfect complement to Myles Garrett. And when he is engaged, give me 50% of Jadeveon Clowney. Give me Jadeveon Clowney busting his ass 50% of the time. I mean, I'm thinking in 18 and 20 games here, guys. I'm not worried about week four. I'm not.
Okay, let's move off the draft for just a minute because I want to get your thoughts on this. The suspension Major League Baseball handed down to Trevor Bauer, does that impact – should the Browns be scared?
I wondered the same thing, and I don't know that. But I would say you were in the room too when Goodell gave his presser, his non-answer at the owners' meetings about Deshaun. The one thing he said – or two things he said. The investigation is ongoing, and now that the criminal part is over, you know, we feel like it will open some more doors. So if the NFL's investigation and ruling, I guess more than the investigation, is truly independent of the outcome of the criminal cases, which we believe to be fully resolved, and the civil cases, which we know are all still pending, then there could be some worry there that, that this could be a longer suspension. We have reported, both of us, right, that the Browns have a quiet, cautious optimism that it will only be 4 or 6 games. There is some uncertainty that it will come at all this year, even though the Browns' actions would point to that it is, and I think the NFL historically has wanted to get these things resolved sooner than later. But yes, when you see that and you match it to what we know, that it is truly independent of the timing, because that's what's going on now. There's jostling in the courtroom, right, on the timing of these suits. Watson's side is saying we're definitely not dealing with any of these during football season. So, yeah, without giving a definite yeah or saying it's totally sound the alarm, I think that is probably a real concern, at least on some level.
And that's a good segue to get back to. I know there's Baker fatigue, and I know you're tired of talking about Baker, and there's nothing new. But this idea that they should hold on to Baker because they may need him next year, I think is ludicrous. Baker Mayfield's not going to take another snap for the Browns.
He's not coming back in the building, guys. It's fantasy land. Now, it's fantasy land now, and things do change in the NFL. But Odell quit the team. The Browns are not signing him back. Throw that headline away.
Yeah.
The Browns needing Baker because Deshaun's going to get suspended. Throw that headline away. That's reality. The Browns broke up with Baker when they got on the flight to Houston, and it only got worse from there. Right? The Browns have moved on with this three-person quarterback room with Jacoby Brissett as the insurance option. So a mad, mad, mad scramble could happen. But the Browns are not going to have Baker back in the building. He is not in the plans. He is rehabbing his shoulder. He will be excused from mandatory minicamp, which is still 6 weeks from now. It's a long time from now. If he could be traded by then. And he's not. It's not, guys. There's nothing new to report on Baker. So and frankly, I'm guilty of it too. When I do my last draft wrap-up article here later today or early tomorrow, it's going to be a part of it because he's a guy on the team that makes $19 million, right? And it's a piece they can move for in some regard. But there's nothing new to report. The Browns wanted somebody to want Baker Mayfield. It wasn't ever going to happen. The Browns knew that. Baker's side probably knew that too. Although, you know, people insist that he thought he could schmooze his way to Indy, and Indy laughed at that thought. But some team will need him.
Here's what I'm exploring writing this. I don't know that we're there yet today, but I think it's coming sooner than later. And I don't even know if I've asked you this off the air, but are we getting to the point where, I mean, in my eyes, the draft is the best opportunity to trade him, and nothing got done. Are we reaching the point where they need to just release him and do right by him?
and give him the opportunity. If they wait until training camp and wait for an injury to trade him,
no,
they've just sunk him, because now he has no time to go in and learn a system. They've totally screwed him.
So no, they did right by him when they picked up that fully guaranteed option.
They did.
That's it.
They did. That's fair. That's true. So you don't think we're reaching the point where they need to just release him?
Not anywhere close. Not until the trade deadline. Okay. No way. If they're haggling over compensation with Carolina, then why would they do? You know, if they release him, then they pay $17.5 million. They still swallow $17.5 million on their cap, and he goes somewhere else and plays for the minimum and gets to choose. Like, the most likely scenario is some team either loses its quarterback or gets through the spring and says, boy, these rookies aren't ready, or boy, this X player is not fit for this new system. And that team trades the Browns a fifth-round pick for Baker and a 7, and the Browns pay 12 of the 19.
And when does that happen?
It's going to be.
July?
Well, in the scenario I just mentioned, it would be mid-June. But if you have to wait for training camp and an injury or an external underperformance, it could be August.
I can't recall a number of quarterback injuries in camp.
No, there aren't. Tampa has a new head coach, and they have guys behind Brady that aren't very good, right? Detroit has – Baker would probably be the number one quarterback in Detroit. But, you know, Jared Goff's dealing with the $40 million dead cap number. So, Baker would definitely be the best player in Atlanta, but they're going with Mariota, and they drafted Desmond Ridder. I mean, Atlanta's playing for next year.
Right.
Baker better than Drew Locke. Yes, he absolutely is. But Seattle's like, well, we're probably not going to be very good this year, and the best thing we can do is let Drew Locke play and find out, because he's still young. You know, came into the league too early, got put in a bad spot, has failed, and he makes no money. Drew Locke is on a fourth-year rookie deal of a second-round player. Like, nothing. He makes nothing. So, you know, why would they do that when they're, again, you know, playing for the future? So, quarterbacks generally do not get hurt in the preseason, and it would be a nightmare scenario if one did. I think what we've done so far is we've looked at the starting situations. I think the backup situations will evolve. And then it just comes down to, like, and thank you guys for listening, what I've been telling you guys since last year. He's a pain in the ass.
Yes.
And teams know it. It's not just the play. It's the deal. It's everything. When your quarterback, when you as an organization have to stop everything you're doing, when your quarterback goes to the podium for his 10 minutes with the media, then you've got a big problem. When you have to worry about after practice that quarterback going on social media or going out partying during COVID or all of these things that Baker participated in, that's bad. This is not looking at a free agent linebacker or tight end and saying, you know, that guy fits easily in the bottom of our room and might be in the middle of the room by the end of the summer. That's not how it works at quarterback. It's a totally different dynamic. So it will evolve. He will have a job. He can play quarterback in this league. He can win games in this league. He can't win a Super Bowl. He can win games in this league. I mean, Barry doesn't answer questions and always comes with a few canned answers. And that presser the week before the draft, when he said, I can't predict the future, and two different times he alluded to 5, 6, 7 months from now. Like, that's what he's saying. We have until the trade deadline, and the Browns will just excuse him. It will not be a distraction internally. It will not. Trust me, in that building, they're way more worried about the suspension and protesters at camp than they are about Baker's just not coming in the building. And in 2-second phone call, they can handle that with Baker's agents. And it will be a headline outside, but it will affect nothing that goes on in those meetings, on that practice field, anything. No, it's not happening.
I agree with that. They don't want him. The guys in the locker room didn't want him. Didn't care for him. Won't be missed. Right. And I don't think that there's this thing. I don't feel like there's a cloud hovering over that team because of the Baker situation. I think it's something we talk about and they talk about when we ask them about it.
That's exactly right, Jason. That is exactly right.
Yeah.
And it's a fair talking point because he's on the roster.
Right.
Because he makes $19 million. He was the number one pick in the draft. He was your savior 3 off seasons ago. Right, and now you couldn't get rid of him soon enough. That's just how it goes. One more thing to that on Kareem Hunt in the running back situation.
Yeah.
If there is a suspension and if Jacoby Brissett has to play more than two games, then the Browns are going to have to run the shit out of the ball.
Yeah.
So, you know, Drew Rosenhaus and Dearness Johnson might come and say, we want all this money. And Dearness might not come to camp because he's the rare guy that doesn't have to. He doesn't have a contract right now.
Yeah.
But as for everybody else, this is about making the playoffs. It's you'd love to win the division. You'd love to be the number one seed. And as I've been saying, these Browns could win 12 or they could win 7. I mean, they could be the AFC's number one seed. I don't think that's out of the question. But it's really about getting to the playoffs. And if Brissett has to play more than a couple of games, then you are going to have to be a very buttoned-down offense and a very different offense than what you eventually hope to be. And that should include Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt doing a lot of the heavy lifting and then turning it over to the defense. I just – like everything we've said here, why wouldn't this team want Jadeveon Clowney? This team needs Jadeveon Clowney. So if Clowney goes elsewhere, or if I'm wrong, I'm not going to kill him. The season's not over. You just cannot present me a scenario where the Browns are better without Jadeveon Clowney than they are with him.
That's fair. I want to ask you, I know this is the Civilized Barking Browns podcast, but I do want to ask you about the Pittsburgh quarterback situation while we're talking about quarterbacks. Were you surprised by the Kenny Pickett pick? And also, did they pull a fast one on Mitch Trubisky? And do you think Mitch Trubisky's a little aggravated today? I think he went to Pittsburgh thinking he was going to be the starter. Now there's a pretty good chance he's not.
Yeah, but he signed a contract that said they weren't married to him. That was a very temporary relationship, and they were giving Mitch the chance to show that he can play. And their thought, you know, I think Mitch is a little bigger than Pickett, not much, but you know, they had no mobility from the quarterback spot, negative mobility. I mean, mm-hmm. Ben is built like me, right? And we're the same age too. they think that Mitch can open things up with the way he can run the ball and the way he can throw on the run. And they think Kenny Pickett's similar. I think they still plan to start Mitch Trubisky. I haven't talked to Caboli about it, our Pittsburgh writer, but Jim Wexel, who I have known for years and has covered the Steelers for as long as I've been alive, he thinks the plan is for Kenny Pickett to be number three this year.
Wow.
I was surprised only by the fact that an outgoing GM was making a quarterback pick. I thought they would take a defensive lineman and then see what happened in the later rounds with the quarterbacks. You know,
they had been linked. Don't you think they let Tomlin make that pick?
They might have. And I don't think it's, you know, the guy was in your building for 5 years. So,
right.
You know, everything there is to know about him, his makeup, his accuracy, his faults, everything, and the small hands. And, you know, I don't think anybody thinks that Kenny Pickett is Joe Burrow. But obviously the Steelers think, look, we have to have a guy. And this guy with our defense and the way we've won games for years gives us a chance to win. You know, there's just no scenario where the Steelers were going to be 3-14 this year and be picking C.J. Stroud or Bryce Young. You know, you have to realize that. So they're paying Trubisky next to nothing. They love Kenny Pickett's makeup, and they think that he will be a fit. I mean, Pitt and the Steelers share the same building, guys. Like, share it. Not the same neighborhood, the same building. So they think it's a seamless transition, and that he'll be ready and eventually can help them win games. They might be wrong on that, but I don't think Trubisky was done wrong at all. And the other thing you can do in this trade-happy NFL, too, is if Kenny Pickett's ready to play in Week 6, Trubisky might have value somewhere. And then you've, you know, taken a guy – paid him a discount rate, gave him a shot, and moved him for something else, and you move along. So I'm not saying I love the pick because I don't think that Kenny Pickett is nearly as talented as the other AFC North quarterbacks. But in a beggars can't be choosers situation, I don't hate the pick, and I think the Steelers, you know, I don't think they're true Super Bowl contenders right now, but I think they're just fine. And I know that nobody in the AFC North wants to play them, and the Browns certainly don't want to play them during a Watson suspension.
So we already touched on the Steelers a couple of times with the Pickens and the Pickett pick, but just your quick thoughts on the rest of the AFC North draft classes in Baltimore and Cincinnati.
Yeah. I mean, Baltimore hit with guys that everybody knows, proven college players. And like when Ravens draft a safety, you just say Canton, right? Like that's just what you say. So they got the best punter in the draft. They're moving on from Sam Cook after like 25 years. Like, the Ravens are going to be right back. They're going to be fine. And they have a receiver question now. But as they totally robbed Arizona blind, but Marquise Brown was a game-changing player because he has, you know, legit top-end speed. So we will see what happens there. But the Ravens certainly got better. And they have some awkwardness with Lamar and that contract situation and trading Lamar's one of his good friends. So we'll see. But I've thought all along that the Ravens would be the favorite to win the division before the Watson trade was made, when the markets opened, Jason, the Ravens were the favorite to win the division, you know, despite being in fourth place last year. And the Bengals, you know, they have attacked the offensive line in free agency, and they drafted some young DBs who can help them. They really are confident in their offense will only get better. I mean, Burrow's played a season and a half. They have a young coaching staff. They have all sorts of guys who got big game experience. So, you know, did a bunch of things happen, fortunately, for them to make the run they made last year? Yes. But are they bringing back the absolute core of that team and only getting better on the offensive line and having a defense that's really good and came together at the right time last year? Sure. So, there are three teams that can win the AFC North, and there are three teams in the AFC North that can win the AFC. So when this schedule comes out next Thursday, you know, hug your Falcons game and your Panthers game. because look, even the Jets now, right? Like, that's a second year quarterback. If he gets confident, you know, somebody on Twitter named him Mormon Manziel when he was in college, and that's I can't even think of his real name. I just want to call him Mormon Manziel.
Oh my goodness.
but you know, they got Garrett Wilson. Like, look, the Browns are going to have a handful of, what I'm saying is the Browns are going to have a handful of games they should win, and even if they play during a suspension. But if this suspension is six games and the Browns playing division games during that time, or playing the Buffalo Bills, New England Patriots, Tampa Bay Bucks during that time, I'm not sure the Browns will be a playoff team. I don't know that. So it's fun, frankly, saying that they could win seven or they could win 12. The schedule's fun, and it's complicated because we don't know about the suspension, and we don't know how the NFL is going to handle that. Every AFC North game, almost every AFC game involving the Browns period could be, you know, a huge marquee game. Tampa coming here could be a Sunday night, Monday night type game. But how are they going to handle it? I don't know. I mean, the one thing, Atlanta's a Sunday 1 o'clock game, and probably at Houston is a Sunday 1 o'clock game, because the NFL is going to want to not have any spotlight on that, right? But, you know, Bengals is – at least one Bengals game is a Thursday night or a Sunday nighter. At least one Ravens game is a Sunday nighter or a Thursday nighter, you know, Monday nighter. And you have a lot of games that could be slotted at 425 spotlight, and then eventually could – there's Monday night flex this year. There's Sunday night flex starting in week six. Like, this is Buffalo game could be – I mean, I'm just spitballing here. Like, it's going to be fun. The schedule's always fun, even when the team's shitty, right? But, like, as far as looking at the really big games and looking at the structure of it. And then another thing, which, you know, it's tiring being right all the time. The bye week last year – came at a bad time for the Browns. The Browns need their bye week in early November, not in early December, because, man, they were limping to that thing last year.
Yeah, that's a point we made multiple times. Last thing for me, I don't normally get as wrapped up in the schedule game as some other people do, but I do think it matters this year. And the fact that there could or there may or may not be a suspension coming, it matters when some of the easier type games appear on the schedule. Do you think it's better off? I think it's a big assumption at this point to assume he's going to be suspended for the first four or five games. I don't know if we know that yet. But if he is, do you think it's better to have the easier games on the front end and give them to Jacoby Brissett? Or do you want them on the back end and just get some of the losses out of the way early?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to predict that because you don't know when the injuries happen and teams evolve, right? And the trap game is a real concept in the NFL. When tired teams and injured teams are looking, and young teams are playing spotlight games and all of that. But yeah, I mean, obviously you would like to see Houston, Atlanta, Washington early in the year, either way, because your offense is going to need some time, right, to evolve. So I think you would like to see those games where you're just clearly better than the other team. And get a couple of those out of the way. You know, when's a good time to play Bill Belichick? When's a good time to play Josh Allen? When's a good time to play the Ravens? You know, there's not. The answer you always get from when you ask the GM or the coach or whomever is the schedule's a schedule, and we look at it and we play the games, and that's right. But, you know, we know there's going to be an early season Thursday night game because it's just the Browns have geographic rivals and the Browns have appeal. So when you have a Thursday night game, it changes your prep. You get guys hurt the week before, you're screwed. And you get that little mini bye coming to the next week and you get a chance to refresh. And I think the numbers bear out that that is an advantage. So
I did think of one thing I wanted to ask you. The fact they did not take a tight end, can we officially say that the 13 package is dead? It doesn't look like they're replacing Austin Hooper. That's not a surprise to me. I didn't think that they were going to. I think the Watson arrival changed a lot of their offensive schemes. What say you?
Yeah, I think the 13 is dead, but I still think they're going to need to shop for a tight end because they need like a battering ram type guy, because mm-hmm. that's certainly not Harrison Bryant. He's improved mm-hmm. as a blocker, and he's, you know, he is an average to above average NFL player. It's what he is. The Browns trust him. They like him. They're going to use him. You know, Njoku, I think, has come a long way as a blocker too, but he is not what Hooper was, and you wouldn't use him in that way. You know, the Browns committed to David Njoku because they envision him getting to the second and third level of the defense. So, I still think they're going to look for a veteran tight end. And yeah, I mean, as you look at this draft class, you could say, hey, what about a tight end, or what about, you know, even another defensive lineman earlier in the draft, something like that. But they didn't, and they have a lot, frankly, invested in Njoku and Bryan, and they need those guys to play. So I think the next guy would be like a waiver wire claim or just a journeyman. I mean, they signed a college basketball player.
I was going to ask you about that.
Over the course of a couple of years.
Do you know anything about him?
Yeah, I mean, he played at VCU and he played at Texas Tech. He was just a big body. You know, they actually, in the undrafted class, they signed a big tight end who had played D2 here in Cleveland with my cousin at Notre Dame College. He went somewhere else. He went to FAU for his grad year. You know, he's 6'6 or 6'7 and 230, and there just aren't many of those guys on the planet. So they're going to try to develop those guys, but is Santos Silva, the college basketball player, anywhere near game ready? No. And everybody's looking for Antonio Gates, obviously, right? Who did that, but the hit rate on these is about 9%. So, you know, good luck to Zaire Mitchell, who's coming in from the Browns to do that, and Santos Silva, who's a long-term project, and Naz Bohannon from Cleveland, who played basketball at Youngstown State and at Clemson, is getting a tryout with the Jaguars. But the hit rate is very, very small on those guys. And I know teams were after Naz last year, Jason, because, you know, he had a COVID year of college basketball and wasn't sure whether he was going to use it or not. And like, that's the pursuit of tight ends, is there, you're always looking for these guys. So it's a fun story, and it's a project that the Browns would like to see through for past this year. But I don't think that they ever envision him scoring a touchdown against the Ravens.
Yeah. All right. Wrap us up and get us out of here.
Yeah, so again, we will probably do a pod for the schedule because it is fun, and we will get suckered into hot takes and jumping to conclusions and all of this stuff. But really, we're waiting on Clowney, and we're waiting on the suspension. Like, I, you know, Kevin has been clear that there's value to the offseason program. It's still about 3 weeks away before they actually have practices. They do some time-restricted on-field work, you know, with 10 or 12 guys at a time now. And it is important. I mean, Deshaun Watson hasn't played football in a year and a half. So that is important. But the most important thing is having the guys in the building, in the meeting room, getting to know each other, getting to know their coaches, and bonding. You know, I think the most important thing we said in this podcast was, and this is something we have talked about and will continue to, as poorly as last year went, as bizarre as it got on multiple fronts, they were still right there and could have made the playoffs and maybe should have made the playoffs, right? So it is about team chemistry and injury luck and doing little things like converting one third down and making one field goal or extra point, right? And when you do that, you get in, and then it's always going to be about having that magical month that the Bengals and Rams just had. So the takeaway from the draft is the Browns think they're good enough to be able to draft a kicker, to be able to trade out of the second round, to do all that. And we'll see if they are, starting in September. So, thank you guys for listening. Talk to you next time on Civilized Breaking.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.